We go straight into our business wrap this evening here on Metro FM Talk. 10 minutes it is after 7 p.m. and helping us to take a look at some of the big stories in the marketplace on this Wednesday is Makwe Masilela, Chief Investment Officer at Makwe Fund Managers. Makwe, vatseje.
Sweet, no mkataka, does it matter?
Ah, mnandi masweet, Makwe, mnandi masweet. Let's start off here, Makwe, in Nigeria. Now, whenever I hear of regulators in Nigeria, you always know when it comes to, you know, Pan-African, South African and headquartered companies, there's always going to be, you know, all manner of question marks around regulatory decisions. 63 billion is the fine that MultiChoice is alleged to be confronting in that part of the world, and not necessarily from the telecoms regulator, but from the taxman.
A taxman, indeed, you know. And well, MTN, so it was how much? $5 billion US dollars. And
yes,
they just paid around...
just over one.
Half a billion. I mean, $1 billion.
Mm.
I think there's something that needs to be understood with the Nigerian authorities. Because, yes, definitely there must be something. There's no smoke. Fire, as we've seen with the likes of MTN, but you ask yourself, how do they get to this amount? You know, I mean, as we've seen the numbers, that money is far away than the value of of MultiChoice Nigeria. And sure, probably there must be something out of there that, hey, the numbers that you gave us as your subscribers are not a true reflection. There is that possibility, but yes.
But Mark, what has that got to do with their tax bill?
It does, you know. Listen, I mean, when you pay your taxes, you declare your revenue, your income. And how do you derive your income? You derive your income by getting money from subscribers.
Is that an allegation that they're fixing the books?
Yeah, but exactly that. You're fixing the books, that the only time you're getting money, then you get people to pay for subscription. So that subscription must be showing. So if you show a small number, then obviously it means your income or your revenue will show as a small number. And then what we tax you is a different story.
Mm. So in a sense, Makwa, I guess what you're suggesting is that there is, much like we saw with MTN, there is a sense that there's an under-reporting on subscribers here. And that's why, you know, the tax man in this case feels they have some case here against MultiChoice in, one of the critical markets. I mean, populous nation of Nigeria.
I remember, even back home here, the taxman will say, you owe me X amount. It's your responsibility to prove them that, no, Mr. Taxman, I don't owe you 5 rand. I owe you 50 cents, or I don't even owe you. You are the one who owes me a refund. So it's up to you to prove to them that, no, I'm not owing you X amount, or I don't even owe you. You are the one who's owing me. There's nothing new with that. But yes, the question should be, is that fine making sense? Definitely doesn't make sense. But if MultiChoice have done anything wrong, must they pay? Definitely they must pay. We are saying we're responsible corporate citizens. And if you're responsible back home here, I think you should show that wherever you go. And we know that sometimes they don't have a case, these people. And you know what? MultiChoice might be having a case. Maybe definitely they didn't understate their numbers. They didn't declare all the numbers. So we're not even passing any judgment that MultiChoice is right or wrong, no. But I'm saying we're open to that. Look what happened to that thing of MTN. They were hanging over their head over 2 years, that thing of the US, that MTN Afghanistan, remember those 200,000
people? Yes, the terrorist
story. And then that magistrate said, listen, we have to dismiss this whole thing. They don't have to go ahead with the whole complaint, even though we know the plaintiffs, they still have a right to appeal. So all I'm saying is they can accuse you and you can still prove them wrong, or the court itself can still throw it out of the court, scrape it off the road.
Well, you know, I mean, Makwe, I guess you're right. We can't, without the full facts in this case, sort of know what's right or what's wrong. But, South African corporations,
true. I mean, so far, our track record is not good.
South African corporations. But then, I guess the other issue, Mark, I'm quite interested in, does MultiChoice disclose their subscriber base in Nigeria? Like how many people they have? Because I guess that's going to be a critical number as we go forward to consider, just based on what the taxman in Nigeria might think they have.
They do, and they have to. As an example, MultiChoice is saying they've got, I mean, according to the latest results, they've got, I think, 20 or 21 million subscribers. Half of them are back home in South Africa, half in Africa. And we know that in Africa, Nigeria is their biggest market. So the question is, how do they get to that number of 21 million?
Eish.
So it means they know, and it's easy to know because we apply to become, you're trying to get your service. You have some unique number for us. If you even fail to pay for a month or so, you just switch us off. So they will know how many, I mean, how many numbers they have.
Yeah. And you know,
how do they know they've got 21 million?
Yeah, this is true. This is true. And you know, Michael, this is a market where they've seen massive subscriber growth and also, I guess, massive subscription revenue growth. I mean, double-digit, 20% growth in subscription revenue in the Nigerian market. So this is not just some Mickey Mouse market somewhere. But as I said, probably, you know, Africa's most populous nation. And maybe, Michael, the other question that arises when you think about Nigeria in particular is this question of repatriation of profit. Now we know, I mean, there's always, I guess, you know, massive challenges in economies like Angola and Nigeria who are heavily reliant on oil revenues when the oil prices tank. It certainly does create, you know, balance of payment challenges and in particular the repatriation of dividends in the capital account of that particular country. Now, I'm quite interested in whether MultiChoice has been able to resolve that, because all of what we're talking about means very, very little if you can't take some of that money out of that country.
Definitely. And I think, remember, there was an issue as well with MTN that they took out $8 billion US dollars, which they were not supposed to take out.
And yeah, yes, they had a fight with the central bank, ne?
Exactly. Nigeria, they even had to fine other banks as well. Now, the question here, I think MultiChoice is sitting with almost 2.3 or 2.6, you know, billion US dollars there. But the reason here is, it's not that the Nigerian government is refusing. It's not that Nigerian government is trying to scam them, because, as you said, oil prices, foreign exchange, what do you call it, they don't have foreign reserves to be able to pay those guys. So should things turn around and the guys have enough in their kitty, and hopefully by then this whole matter has been resolved, because as we're talking now, apparently the bank statements have been frozen. If by then everything has been resolved, then MultiChoice should be able to take their money out of Nigeria. The consoling thing here is a question of the guys don't have enough to be able to allow the likes of MultiChoice to take that money back home.
Do you anticipate that that situation is going to improve, just on your reading of what the oil price is going to do?
It will. I mean, look where we are. You know, oil prices, as we're talking now, are almost 24% up for the year. I mean, that's hovering around $24 a barrel. And now with the whole demand kicking in, because maybe the vaccine rollout gets to be, what do you call it, successful, then people will go back to normal. People will start traveling. Then demand of oil will continue. Yes, it might not happen in 3 months' time or so, but there is that likelihood that come the next coming 12 months, you should see some changes. And remember also, with this money that the U.S. is putting in on the infrastructure, that $1 trillion, stuff like that, then the economy should start growing. As we know that economies, the minute they start growing, then definitely there is demand for oil. So it is bound to change.
Yeah, I mean,
the question is when,
you know? Yeah. And I guess, is that going to happen quickly enough to deal with some of the other challenges that are always associated with what happens when it's boom time, when it comes to oil prices? But Mark, well, let's stay here on the continent and take a look at the Paramount Group. Now, this is, you know, I think Ivo Chikovitz's group, one of the largest, if not the largest, arms dealer, a private arms dealer on the continent, Paramount Group, and they have a maritime division, which has been kept very, very busy, least of all its shipbuilding operations, by the war that, or I guess the piracy that is unfolding there in that Gulf, I guess in the western parts of our continent, the Gulf of Guinea, through, from Senegal through, I guess, to the port of Luanda, somewhere there. Maybe give us some of the context here. What's happening? I mean, when we think about pirates, we often think on the Horn of Africa, around Somalia and other parts. But it does seem the Gulf of Guinea has accounted in the last while for much of the abductions that we've seen.
Definitely, and I think the issue of Somalia, I remember at some point we had some navy that were deployed there, but now knowing that there are other areas where there's not enough security and there's a lot of shipment, you know, whether it's commercial or oil, then people are taking that as an advantage, saying that, listen, these guys, they don't have the necessary protection. And as we all know, you know, whether you are an individual or you are a multinational, we end up spending so much when it comes to security, whether it's physical security or for our buildings or cyber security, whatever it is. Security has been such a big industry because there are people out there who are looking for opportunities to make a quick buck. But so far, as you said, that looks like it's very, very nice or lucrative market. Hence, now people have been kidnapping people from that side. So companies, what do you do as a corporation? You have to come with private security. And to come with a private security, what do you do? Then you end up having to get a boat. And it's just so unfortunate, Aya, to see how much people are spending on personal security. I mean, just check your household. What alarms do you have if you do? But we are just not safe. I mean, just look at the mere car. You've got the immobilizers, you've got trackers, you know, all this.
Yeah, thing. But Makwe, it's the price of living in the most unequal society in the world. And that gulf, in my view, is no different, you know. I mean, if you're seeing stuff moving on your shoreline every day, high value stuff, you're going to want some of that. Let's pause there. Makwe, let's pause there for a second, take a quick spot break. When we come back, we continue with the story of piracy on the Gulf of Guinea. It is after 7 p.m. It's the wrap of the top business stories on this Wednesday, and I'm joined by Makwe Maselela, Chief Investment Officer at Makwe Fund Managers, and taking a look at the big stories out in the world of money and power on this Wednesday. And Makwe, before we went to the break, we were talking about how the surge in piracy on the Gulf of Guinea has certainly, I guess, been a boon for the Paramount Group's maritime division. And a very fascinating image there coming out of one of the reports on this, of a boatyard out in Cape Town, and massive operation. But as I was saying, Mark, where I guess, you know, when we think about all of these security concerns, and you were likening it, you know, to what needs to happen in South Africa, and a lot of that really being driven by inequality. I mean, if you think about, you know, what even maritime is saying is probably going to be the next massive market opportunity for them, it's in that conflict that is unfolding out in Mozambique, which is no doubt related to the gas discoveries, related to what people are seeing as massive value. But I guess always having a claim, and, you know, criminal elements, of course, are always part of this, and make, you know, some use and exploit many of these genuine concerns, you know, for their own ends as well. So it's a toxic mix, but it certainly is, I guess, making significant money for the Paramount Group.
Definitely it is. You know, and as you are saying, Aya, it's all these inequalities. It doesn't make it right, but that's the reason why they will see that, listen, there's just so much cargo passing here. We're not benefiting. The issues with Mozambique, I mean, that oil, I mean, the gas project, I mean, we're talking plus minus $20 billion US dollars. So the question is, will people, the locals, be able to benefit? If not, then definitely they won't be too happy. Hence, you'll see people trying to sabotage stuff. But the long and short is that when it comes to security, it just been such a good industry booming. And as we are saying, it doesn't just involve corporations, even individuals. But if we have to address these things the right way, I think when people can feel a sense of belonging, if people can feel that they're part of this whole thing, I don't think they will see a need to either, I mean, hijack stuff or destroy stuff, because they know they've got a lot to lose. You don't want to get people to be in a situation where they've got absolutely nothing to lose.
Hey, and that's dangerous. I mean, that's the reality of where we are now. I mean, you know, too many people with too little to lose, and I guess too much production and value being distributed and circulating in too few places, which I guess is the reality of our life here in South Africa. But Makwe, I guess, you know, when Paramount says they've got 26 ships that are being manufactured out in the shipyard and orders to the value of around $16 million US dollars. I don't know how I calibrate that. Is that a lot, or is that, I mean, when you compare it, I guess, to some producers, say, in Israel and other parts of the world who are also in the shipbuilding industry?
I think when you compare to the likes of the Israel, the Singapore guys, you know, that's not a lot, and hence I think Paramount is getting serious competition from those guys. But in South African context, you know, to say I've got a pipeline of at least 60 million, I mean, if you divide that by the current exchange rate, that's just good money for a South African company, because at the end of the day, the guys will be coasting in rent, so they'll be able to make super profit. So in South African terms, then definitely that's good business.
Of course, not in the best of circumstances, Makwe, but I mean, I guess that's the reality of how these things happen. I want us to shift to Kenya slightly before we maybe sort of finish off with the stories coming out of Telkom, which include a new CEO, but also, I guess, a good showing for their mobile business. And start off in Kenya. I'm always interested in these stories of reparations. And Kenya is a very interesting example, just largely because of how, you know, British colonialism certainly entrenched, I guess, you know, very particular forms of capitalist relations in Kenya. And one of the elements of that was, of course, the removal of people from their land to, you know, plant tea, and massive tea plantations in the highlands of that particular East African country. And now some of those communities have gone to the United Nations. To get, I guess, special rapporteurs to deal with their matter and make representations to the United Kingdom government. What's happening here?
And I think the issue here, the directive has been so clear, is the UK government, which is not coming to the party. The United Nations is even disappointed that the way the UK is treating the whole matter, because it's straightforward that this is exactly what happened. No one is disputing that. The guys were removed, the guys, because all those British guys have to come and plant some tea. And you ask yourself that, I mean, what is the commonalities between their story and that one? Where's Robert Mugabe? Zimbabwe. You know, that, remember the issue with the Robert Mugabe story then, Zimbabwe, was that they were trying to also move the farmers who were mainly from the UK, because they came and occupied the land, plant tobacco, stuff like that. But maybe this one is different, because the Kenyans approached the United Nations. It's not like a forced removal, you know. But at the end of the day, if the guys were forced to move away, the guys definitely have to be looked after. It cannot just be business as normal. And we know this multinational, as soon as they make a buck, they take that money back home. It doesn't even benefit the local economy. We cannot allow stuff like that to continue to happen. And I think the Kenyans were more decent with their approach, the way they went through the United Nations.
But then, Mark, I mean, this is a question, Mark. You know, if I listen to this experience of this community here, I don't think it's in any way different to the experiences of many a community, I mean, that has been, you know, kicked off land before you even go to other places, even here in South Africa. And it does seem that here in South Africa, this debate isn't one we even are open to entertaining. I mean, and I'm not talking about apartheid. I'm talking even predating apartheid. So, you know, during the time of the, I guess, British dominion or whatever, Surely that should be a discussion that's open, or have we said, because we did the TRC, we are happy, file closed, bye-bye?
I think the danger with these things, Aya, is that currently we can say this is a done deal, but you'll get the generation who will open up that can. And exactly. If you don't address it now, you're just kicking the can further down the road. You'll get people who will be adamant and say, oops, the buck stops here. These issues have to be addressed. They were not dealt with properly. As we've seen, that people always have a right to revisit issues. As an example, look what happened to the arms deal. It has been revisited. They said things were not done properly. It has to come back. So I'm just saying, people have the right in a way to bring things back. So even this issue, me and you can say we're happy with the current solution, but the next generation also, or not even the next generation, can say, nope.
Chief, there's no solution at the moment. I mean, people who were evicted, I mean, I know, dude, even in my own family, like there's nothing. So I think those are the big question marks, you know. I mean,
sure.
People who've been evicted, be it from Sophiatown, you know, Katomana, Walmart, to KwaZakhele or whatever, like, there's nothing, Makwe.
But my brother, for now, there's nothing, you're right. But one day can be open. No, you're right.
That's true.
But now it doesn't
look
okay.
Eish, Baba. Makwe, we know Sipho Maseko is going to be exiting stage left. From Telkom, there's a new CEO who's been appointed, and you'll tell us a bit more about that particular gentleman. But I guess also putting out a trading update today for the quarter ending 30 June, and I guess a good showing on their end. Group revenue up 3.5%, and mobile data leading the charge, but also I guess seeing some strong fiber to the home improvement, just over 32.2%. To around 306,837 households that have been connected.
And you look also at the active mobile users, you know, I mean, increasing by almost 36% to just over 16.1 million. And hence, maybe they are seen as the third largest, you know, they have passed Cell C. But I think we have to give it to Telkom generally to transform themselves in the past 6, 8 years or so, or 5 years, from what we've known them as the fifth line operator to what they are today. And still, they still have legs to run on. And yes, for them to continue to come with these decent numbers, and yes, we know at some point the guys had to retrench some of the workers, but I guess they managed to get it right. And the only thing that is waiting for them is just to continue to print money.
Yeah,
it's well positioned. You know, the amount of fiber, the amount of fiber and copper that they have, the guys underground, it's just so much. And remember, it has been done over years. Remember, this was purely a state-owned company before.
Yeah.
So that infrastructure was there a long time ago. Only if they can find a way to utilize it the right way, then I think they stand a very good chance. Let alone the buildings that they own themselves. So they also have a very decent property portfolio.
Mm. Yeah, first mover advantage, and I guess, yeah, maybe that's not the thing. I mean, just benefits from being an erstwhile state monopoly, if I can put it that way. Makwe, as always, a pleasure, you know, to be with you on this platform, my brother. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.
That there was Makwe Maselela, Chief Investment Officer and Founder at Makwe Fund Managers. We're going to take a brief break now, and on the other side, we speak to David Neiman, who's a director at the Cernic Group, and they respond to allegations of worker ill-treatment.